Okay. The only people that live in my house are my wife and me. And that's just really weird. That's just really strange. After 22 years of all these people in the house, it's just my wife. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. You have found the only podcast in the world totally devoted to the coverage of the four major sports franchises in one great American city. Plus the IFL, the USL Championship, the WNBA, ASU, U of A, and GCU. Did I really do all that? I think I did. I had to have forgotten something. Good morning. I did it again. I got out of that habit at the end of last week. But 15 years of telling you good morning, it's still buried in there. Today is Monday. Therefore, please don't forget, I'm going to do my what we call a hit in the business. For 1 hour from 1 to 2, I'll be on 1580 The Fanatic on the show The Main Event with Izzy and the host, which is Big Steve, Steve McCollum. So hopefully you'll be able to tune in for that today. And they do me a favor by having me on so I can hopefully get some a little more attention to Doug Franz Unplugged and convert some people. And usually Steve gives me about 30 seconds to say something about Doug Franz Unplugged to get new people to enlist into the Unplugged Army. And then hopefully what benefits them is some of you are nice enough to make the switch if you've never been a 1580 listener before and you come over and listen to some of their show at 1 o'clock because you're a hardcore member of the Unplugged Army. So that would greatly help. My weekend was very, very emotional. It's the only way I can put it. Extremely emotional. Saturday morning, 7:30 in the morning was when we moved my daughter into college. And I don't know what it is. I'm very, very close to my wife. But whenever we are moving or are in an airport, if we're moving or in an airport, we argue. It's just clockwork. We argue. You would think after 25 years, however it's been, 26, 27 years of marriage, we would figure out how not to argue when we're moving or we're in an airport. And yet we failed. And so we were arguing and when we argue, we don't like yell at each other or anything like that, but we just, no, Jennifer, I'll get it. You know, it's kind of like that business. And then she will just kind of walk away. And so poor McKenna's right in the middle of that on her big day of moving in. So we got through it. We got through it just fine. And we ended up taking McKenna out to dinner that Friday night. But then in the middle of that was Mike Hazen's wife's funeral, Nicole Hazen. And they called it a celebration of life at the funeral mass. I've got a lot of things to say about that later on in the show. But that was gut-wrenching. That was gut-wrenching. So you can imagine the up and downs of moving your daughter into college, the proud excitement you have for her. Then you have arguing with your wife, and then you're going to a funeral for someone's wife, and then you realize what an idiot you were for arguing with your wife because your wife is still alive. You know what I mean? It was kind of like that. You can imagine the up and down. Doug's big one today, my big opinion, I don't even want to give you my big opinion because I understand it's too early. I understand how easily embarrassing I'm going to be at myself if I'm proven wrong. And I'm rooting for myself to be proven wrong. But my big opinion today, Zaven Collins can't play. I mean, If I realize you can just say, well, you had a bad game. There's going to be people that say, oh, he just had a bad game. But when you see his fundamentals completely break down, I was hoping when I saw stuff like this last year, it was because he was just thinking too much. And if you're just thinking too much, then you get it. Okay, I get it. You're just thinking too much. Fundamentals break down because you've got so much going on in your head. No. That's going to be a blown draft pick. And I don't attack Zaven Collins at all for this. It is like there are so, like Robert Kemdichi. Sorry, it took me a while to think of his name. Robert Kemdichi, I will still say it's a bad draft pick, of course, but it's the fault of Robert Kemdichi. Robert Kemdichi did not care enough about being a good football player. He did not care enough. He has all of the talent, all of the strength, all of the skills. He just doesn't have any desire to work hard at his craft. That's on him. Now, there were warning signs at Ole Miss, so it's still a bad draft pick, but, you know, I totally understand what happened there with the Arizona Cardinals. I support them on that draft pick, and you just whiff. Sometimes you take a chance, and you whiff. The Zaven Collins thing, this kid's trying as hard as he can. This kid wants to be great. He cares about what he's doing. It's just the fundamentals aren't there. They just don't click. He just has no natural, you know, basis for being out there. I got a lot to say on Zaven Collins when we dive into Cardinals today. But there's a lot of positives, too, that I saw from the Cardinals. And the Diamondbacks got me jacked up. So that's all upcoming on today's Doug Franz Unplugged. Up next, your four-minute offense. If you're new to the Unplugged Army, it only takes me 4 minutes to go through everything you need to know that affects the sports world of Phoenix, Arizona. It's coming up on Doug Franz Unplugged. 602-899-7000 is the phone number for Ideal Home Loans. 602-899-7000. If you have high credit card debt, call Ideal Home Loans. Use the equity in your home to get out of that high credit card debt. Interest rates right now are crazy. But even though they're crazy on your home, they're even crazier on your credit cards. That's where Ideal Home Loans can come in. If you choose to use Ideal Home Loans and the equity in your home, after you've closed your new refinance with Ideal Home Loans, 6 months later, anytime interest rates drop a half a percentage point or more, you'll be contacted and eligible for a new mortgage, and they waive the lender fees. And it's Ideal Home Loans that does all the monitoring to see if you are eligible. Why do they do it? Because they know that's the right thing to do in these difficult times. 602-899-7000 or go to idealhomeloans.com.
Four minute offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in downtown Cincinnati. Cardinals the winner 36-23 over the Bengals. Trace McSorley went 13-22 for 163 yards, and he threw a touchdown pass.
We were pretty efficient, felt like. Took care of the ball, didn't have any turnovers, so that's overall going to be winning football for us.
That's McSorley after the game. But in the battle for the third-string quarterback position, Garantano looked good too. He completed 70% of his passes for 54 yards, and he threw a touchdown pass as well. Two of the players everyone had eyes on were Marco Wilson at corner and Zaven Collins at middle linebacker. Coach Cliff Kingsbury, how'd they do?
I'll have to watch the film and see, but I thought Zaven moved around pretty well, and then on Marco, there were a couple plays his way that I'll have to see kind of what happened on those, but it was good to get both those guys out there and get them playing some meaningful snaps.
One point of potential concern, kicker Matt Prater missed two extra points. Cardinals take on the Baltimore Ravens in game two of the preseason, Sunday at home, kickoff at 5 o'clock. Diamondbacks go into Colorado and take 2 out of 3. Yesterday, Diamondbacks take a 7-0 lead, hold on to win 7-4. Christian Walker goes 4-for-5, and a 9th-inning double could have been a triple, which would have given him the cycle. His 3rd-inning home run was a 460-foot shot, good for 3 of his 4 RBIs on the day.
I was just trying to get it close to me. I felt pretty good on his fastball. You know, I knew I had to be ready to hit it, but I didn't feel like it was really going to beat me, so trying to get the ball close to me, and that starter, or the slider started exactly where I wanted it to, and you know, just kind of spun and flattened out on him, so you know, it ended up being a good pitch to hit.
Josh Rojas also went 2-for-4 with a stolen base, completing a 3-game series in which Rojas went 6-of-13 with 5 RBIs. Diamondbacks are still on the road today. They take on the Giants tonight in San Francisco. First pitch at 6:45. Mad Bum on the hill for Arizona. Sham Sharania, Athletics NBA insider, first to report on the Christmas Day games that'll be nationally televised across the country in the NBA. The marquee matchup is not the Suns. It's Memphis at Golden State. The Suns, however, did make a Christmas Day game, but they're on the road. They're at Denver. No game time has been announced as of yet. Mercury a winner and a loser. They beat Dallas 86-74 on Friday. They lose to Chicago 82-67 yesterday. They're 15-21 1 record, despite being 6 games below 500, is good for the number 8 and final spot in the WNBA playoffs. Game 1 on the road at Las Vegas, Wednesday night, tip off at 7. Phoenix Rising's playoff hopes might have ended Friday. They lose to Orange County 2-1 Friday night. Orange County's the worst team in the Western Conference. They're off for 2 weeks. They don't play again until August 31st. IFL championship game that did not include the Arizona Rattlers. Northern Arizona brings the title home to the state. The Wranglers beat Quad City 47-45 for the championship. And NFL news, for some people it's too little too late. Deshaun Watson apologized.
Look, I want to say that I'm truly sorry to all the women that I've impacted in this situation. My decisions that I made in my life that put me in this position.
And finally, according to Cory Doctorow, a school district gave out student laptops with a very invasive malware software program put into it to monitor the students. Well, one student flipped the entire system onto the school district, and he hijacked every projector screen, locking out all teacher remotes, disabled even their physical on-off switches to the lights, and took over every PA speaker in the entire district. And of course, one of the school district's passwords was password. I like to react to those crazy stories, but admittedly, I don't know enough. I don't know enough about flipping some kind of spyware into the entire computer system. But it is kind of funny to think of this kid controlling. Could you? What would you do if you were a student and you had full control of the PA system of every school in your school district? Oh my gosh. I would have gotten into serious trouble. You know, I would have gotten on there and said, you know, right in the middle of junior high, like if I'm a, I don't know, a senior in high school, but I have control of the junior high PA system. I would just, Mrs. Palguda, you need to report to the office. You're not doing a good job. You know, I would say something like that. And then Mrs. Palguda would have to leave, go to the office. And then the office like, we don't have anything to do with this, Mrs. Palguda. And then I'd get back on there. Mrs. Palguda, you're not as good of a teacher as you think you are. You know, and I would just, it would have been awful. I would have been so rude. I admit it totally. If I had the lack of maturity I had as a senior in high school, and then you combine that with the power of a PA system, oh, it would have been bad news. It would have been absolutely bad news. Sound credits today. AZCardinals.com is where I got the Demukeji, the Cliff Kingsbury, the Trace McSorley, and the Zaven Collins that I'm going to be playing for you. ESPN.com gave me the J.J. Watt that I've got and the John Calipari stuff I can't wait to get to. This is so, so strange. And I also got Deshaun Watson's apology from ESPN.com, but that was a Cleveland ABC TV station that they got that from. And then I got some Christian Walker for you today, and he was from Bally Sports, Arizona. Let's jump into the Cardinals game first and their game against the Bengals. There were a lot of good things. So if you care about the score, and I don't, Cardinals will win 36-23. Their next game's against Baltimore coming up Sunday night. Trace McSorley, 13-22 for 163 and a touchdown, and Garantano was 7 of 10 for 54 yards and a touchdown as well. If you want, let's go through kind of the good things before I get into my big opinion on Zaven Collins and what I saw from him. You'll never guess what my number one positive was, and that is Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray was my number one positive of the whole game. Mock me if you want, because there were other positives that you might want to talk about. But if I'm a big believer in body language and I'm going to rip him for all the bad body language that he's had over the years, then this is the exact type of body language that you want to see. Do you see the difference? You might think it's simple. What, the guy brought water over to people. What does it matter? But he's that engaged for the needs of other people. In previous years when he wasn't playing, he was aloof. He'd have the little quarterback earpiece in, and he'd stand there and he wouldn't do much. He wasn't engaged with his teammates. He was totally engaged, from beginning to end with his teammates. Genuinely excited when a teammate did something well. Talking to Trace McSorley. Talking to Cliff. Just into the game. He did things that leaders do in that game. And I will not back down on my criticism of Kyler Murray, the leader. I will eventually say I'm dead wrong if he has a wonderful season, because remember I said back in February they should have traded him and not given in to the Murray Manifesto and said, that's it. I'm not paying him this much money. But when I see what I saw from him on the sidelines and his demeanor, granted, it's a game that doesn't count and there's no pressure on him whatsoever, and he knew he was never going to see the field. Pretty easy to lead in that situation. But in the past, he hasn't even done that. So massive props to Kyler Murray. And if you're a Cardinals fan, I would think that's exactly what you want to see. My second biggest positive that I saw was the pass rush. The pass rush was so much better than I expected. Yes, it's backups on backups. I'm not denying that. But backups are going to be playing. And you need to know, can somebody other than J.J. Watt and Marcus Golden bring a pass rush? Mukhegi was an animal in this game. In the postgame on azcardinals.com, the sideline reporter Darren Urban brought up a hands drill that he has seen Mukhegi doing. And it obviously had a huge benefit, because there were quite a few times where a lineman for a second was able to get hands on Mukhegi, and Mukhegi was either able to grab their hands and nullify him through sheer strength, or quickly shed those hands, get inside the block, and then be able to physically move human beings out of his way on his way to the quarterback.
You got to give it to Charlie Bulling. You know, he's a great outside linebacker coach. You know, we work on that. That's one of the drills we work on each and every day we show up to practice. And, you know, I feel like that's one of my go-tos. And it's just natural. When I go out there, it feels natural to me. So it's all paying dividends.
The other person that jacked me up was Dennis Gardeck. I never thought Gardeck was a fluke, but I did feel like at times last year, these are just little anomaly plays. Again, backup offensive line in for the Bengals. But Dennis Gardeck continually was getting into the hands, inside the body, basically, of tackles. And when he was doing that, they were forced to hold him. That was the only way they could keep him away from the quarterback, was holding him. Now, you're going to see a lot of flags for holding during the preseason. That's what referees do. They throw it a lot to say, see, you can't do that, to kind of coach up players. But then they don't always call it in the regular season. If they're not calling those holds, it really nullifies the game of Gardeck. There's a very good chance Gardeck is not going to get a lot of sacks, but Dennis Gardeck will force a lot of second and 20s. First and 20s, I should say. That's going to be a good thing. And we could credit him for a sack in that sense. Not statistically, but for us as fans, cheering him on and knowing what's really happening as an intelligent Cardinals fan, that these penalty yards are due to the pass rush of Dennis Gardeck. If they're not calling it, then you're going to have a major problem. Also, you don't scheme to face a specific defense in the preseason. So there's one thing that is happening where a team wants to see how my quarterback is going to react to this. How are receivers going to run this route? How are they going to break off when there's pressure on a hot route? You're kind of more calling plays to see how you react. In a game, regular season, you're going to see a lot of NFL teams take the football and just run it right at Dennis Gardeck. Okay, Gardeck, you want to come off the ball this fast and try to get swallowed up by my tackle? Well, what happens when my right tackle is actually blocking you? Just going to come off the ball and blow you up. We're going to run the ball right at you. And if you can't hold up against the run, well, then we don't have to stop running the football at all. So we don't have to worry about you as a pass rusher. So I'm very excited about what I saw from the backup pass rushers, including Dennis Gardeck. But, and a huge but, is that, keep in mind, they're not in any way scheming for Gardeck right now, and they will. I thought Will Hernandez was a positive, you know? I didn't think he was dominant or anything like that, but he showed the level of physicality that I really think this team needs. And they haven't had it in the entire time that Cliff Kingsbury was there. And now when you've got guys like Justin Pugh and Will Hernandez at the guard, two guys that want to be physical, that's really good. Now, neither of them are great athletes, but I think you're going to be able to pull them a little bit and be able to have an athletic run game. Not great, but an athletic run game. I really liked Will Hernandez. I think he's going to be a good pickup. I think he's going to help the team. He looked good in game one. Okay, I don't know what's going to happen. It might be too little too late, but another major positive all of camp and then specifically backed up in this game was Andy Isabella. Drew two defensive pass interference penalties, caught every pass that was one, except one that was in his direction. And I'm not talking about the one he dropped in the because of the DPI, because that doesn't count as a drop. There was another one that's not going to count as a drop in any way. It was not a good throw. But you would like to see him, if you remember it, it happened at the bottom of your screen in which he was getting hit in the back at about the same time the ball was coming, way too high and outside of a throw to make it an easy catch. But it's those kind of contested catches that you need a receiver to be able to make some big plays. And Andy's not a possession receiver. He's a go down the field deep ball guy. So maybe you're not necessarily counting on him for contested catches. But what a difference it would make if he could have made that catch. So I still don't think he's made the team because of how poorly he's played in the years since he was drafted. But this is far and away his best camp, and he actually has a chance to make the team. And that's crazy talk. I mean, think about how bad he was doing. The only reason he's here is because the team would actually like to get a draft pick for him. Like, well, we might as well keep you. And now he's forcing their hand and could make this team. Positives defensively. Lawrence Ledbetter and Manny Jones. Oh my goodness. Did these guys flash? Rashard Lawrence did a lot in collapsing the pocket. And he played really solid. Ledbetter drew my attention multiple times. Now, I'm watching the game off the DVR. I'm rewinding between plays sometimes to see another play again. So I don't have a count of exactly how many snaps Ledbetter was in. He might have only had four good snaps in the whole game. But the four that I saw, that he just flashed. And Manny Jones was making plays all the time. Those three young men really helped separate themselves. I'm going to say it's a positive now, but I'm really dying to know, is Cliff Kingsbury just messing with our head? The amount of plays that were run under center is really a source of excitement if you're a Cardinals fan. Finally, by running plays under center, you force a lot more honesty in the defense, and it's harder to cover Kyler in the run game out of when plays are going from under center. And it's also interesting that Kyler Murray, while he was calling the plays, called plays in which the quarterback was under center. That's kind of important too. Does it mean he's actually embracing taking the ball and being from under center? That's a big deal. It's going to make it a lot more difficult on defensive coordinators. Here's why this is one of my last positives and why it's near the end, is because I don't know whether I believe it. It's the preseason. So are you showing a lot of plays under center as if to tell the rest of the league, look what we can do this year. Look what we're going to do this year. And then you'd never do it. You do it just as rarely as you used to do it. Okay, that's a very real possibility. But if Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury want to win football games, they need to have more plays under center. They need to be more physical. They need to be able to run the ball out of those situations. But for a preseason game, I got to give them credit since they did it. I'll believe it when I see it week one, week two, week three. Then I'll think it's real. But I was still happy, very happy, with how well they succeeded in running plays under center against the Bengals. And lastly, how about Greg Dortch? I told you about how well I thought he did in all of the training camp practices, and the people just keep talking about it and keep talking about it and keep talking about him. Greg Dortch really, really did some good things.
Yeah, he continues to make plays when his number's called. I think our biggest deal with Dortch is just to continue to fine-tune his game, understand the scheme, consistently day in, day out, execute the plays and really master the system. Because when he knows what he's doing and he gets an opportunity to make a play, he usually does.
Okay, other things to keep an eye on, the cleanliness of the quarterbacks. Quarterbacks stayed healthy. They made reasonably good decisions. There were a couple by McSorley that were really, two of them in particular, that were really bad, that a first-string corner would have intercepted. But McSorley looked pretty good and ran a clean game.
We were pretty efficient, felt like. Took care of the ball, didn't have any turnovers. So that's overall going to be winning football for us. And I think some of the times probably could just taken some of the things underneath, not try to force it down the field too much. Probably got a little greedy at times, but that's something we'll be able to get back and watch the film and improve on.
I'm glad he recognized that. You know, unless I see it from behind the quarterback to really know what he's seeing and see the film, I don't know about how things were layered and who was open, but it did seem like some of the downfield throws just weren't there and he wanted to take chunk yardage. But I care more about, did you have 11 people in the huddle, or were you getting into the huddle and having 12 people? Were you having a lot of false starts? Were you having a lot of delay of games? There was an issue with Garantano in there once, but for the most part, when you don't have any turnovers and you only had a couple penalties, that's a clean game.
You know, anytime you get out of preseason healthy and can play a clean game with substitutions, penalties, no turnovers, I thought that was what we wanted out of it. Long way to go. A lot of stuff we got to get better at, but we preached playing clean, and I thought we did that for the most part.
Okay, time for the negatives. I'll say the big negative for last, and we'll spend more of the Cardinals portion of the show here talking about Zaven Collins. But the other ones that I looked at as negatives, Marco Wilson did not get it done. There's a very good chance he got dropped down behind Josh Jackson for the starting cornerback position. And Josh Jackson, he wasn't good enough to where I would say he was a big positive, but Josh Jackson wasn't a negative. Marco Wilson just did not look comfortable. He was still struggling with being able to drop back in his back pedal and then attack the football. It was a little sloppy. Like, there's a lot going on in his head right now. And he was just getting simply beat. When you're playing in a situation where you were getting torched a lot last year but showing flashes, this was one of those games where you're supposed to be able to put it together against their backups, and he wasn't quite able to do it. Doesn't mean he's dead. Doesn't mean that he's suddenly a finished product and won't be able to succeed. But we need to see a major leap going up against Baltimore this Sunday night from the other corner, Marco Wilson. James Wiggins. I didn't know very much about this young man when I was there at training camp practices. I know all I need to know now. His angles continually from the safety position were a disaster. And his worst two plays just happened to be two offensive holding plays by the Bengals, so they got called back. But don't worry, Wiggins wasn't the one being held. Wiggins really does not see the game well at an NFL level. The game is either going too fast for him, or he was never really taught well, and he's so far behind the eight ball. I don't see this young man being able to play at the NFL level. Matt Prater, what's going on? Make your extra points. Let's go. Another person I'm putting in the negative category was Eno Benjamin. Eno did not play bad. He doesn't belong in the negative category simply because of his play. I'm putting him there, though, because of my high expectations. I thought he played average, and this isn't the time to play average. You've got to do a lot more than be average if you're going to be able to actually be Chase Edmonds' replacement. That's going to be really important. And for me, it wasn't good enough. I would say that Ward was the second best running back. But, well, I'm saying he was the best for the Cardinals, but I mean behind James Conner. if I'm the Cardinals, I'm now looking at Ward as possibly being the guy, which would mean Eno is going to fight on special teams and he might be the third string guy. Or maybe with Ingram getting a touchdown and going seven rushes for 27 yards, you might say, you know what? Let's keep the younger guy. We've given Eno enough time. Eno, to me, went from the talk of camp to a camp guy, just like that. And he's not going to get cut in the round of cuts that's upcoming next week. He's still going to be on the roster, so he still has plenty of time in the next two games to be able to upgrade the performance. But he was not bad. He just wasn't good enough. Now, time for Zaven Collins. Coach Cliff Kingsbury, what'd you see from the two guys that everybody's looking at, Zaven Collins and Marco Wilson?
I'll have to watch the film and see, but I thought Zaven moved around pretty well, and then on Marco, there were a couple plays his way that I'll have to see kind of what happened on those, but it was good to get both those guys out there and get them playing some meaningful snaps.
So you can tell Marco disappointed. Zaven didn't impress but didn't disappoint, just as far as watching it without the film. I think when Cliff sees the film, he's going to be really disappointed in Zaven Collins. Zaven did not sound disappointed in himself.
Yeah, year two definitely slows down from year one, you know, even going into a preseason game. I thought we played really clean. I only had, I think, like 20 snaps. Only played a couple series. But I thought we executed well. Game slowed down for me. No MEs, you know, so it was nice. And, you know, just didn't have the ball really coming my way. So, but other than that, everything was clean, so.
Listen, he's such a good young man that, you know, I'm rooting for him. I'm really rooting for him. But watching him, the fundamentals are just so bad. He read a play well, came running up, and then he met a blocker in the hole. And when you meet that blocker in the hole, you want to either be able to run right through him and make the tackle, or engage, shed the block, and make the tackle. And for some reason, Zaven just turned and gave him, put a shoulder into his chest, and just kind of got swallowed up. Zaven just basically blocked himself. And what was scary about that is that seemed natural to him. Like, I don't think that's a case where your fundamentals sometimes can break down under pressure. You know, Mike Tyson used to say everybody's got a plan until they're punched in the face. And when you're getting physically manhandled, it's easy for you to forget the fundamentals. He wasn't manhandled yet. He just ran into somebody and kind of cowered into their chest. I'm not calling him a coward. Don't switch that around. But it's just a phrase meaning you didn't engage. You just kind of, here's my shoulder, and I hope my raw power somehow makes you stop blocking me. That was an instinctive move. I'm only talking about one play. So it's easy for you to say, Doug, oh my gosh, how are you harping on a kid for one play? But the reason why I'm harping on it is that was instinctual. Somehow his instinct said, I'm just going to turn my shoulder right now, which is never, ever, ever been taught in the history of middle linebacker play. Why was that natural to you to do that, Zaven? That made no sense. There were quite a few times where he would see an angle to the ball, but he could not anticipate what's called the trash. And that is just all the things that goes on in the life of a middle linebacker, of an offensive lineman shedding a deuce block. So it's two guys blocking one, and then you get rid of it and you move up and to be able to block at the second level. And there were constantly people, defensive linemen, that were there, and he couldn't get around it. He couldn't see how to go make the play. And he can't deliver a blow. He doesn't really deliver major contact because it's taking him so long to see what's about to happen. I think in year two, game one, you expect to see none of the issues of last year. I'm sorry. I'm not going to call him a bust, because to me, a bust means he failed. He didn't fail anybody. Steve Keim failed. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Zaven Collins sees this and suddenly appears out of nowhere as an amazing player the next two games. But there is no doubt in my mind that this young man can't play consistent NFL football. He might be a great special teams player, and he's somebody that you can use as a backup linebacker in certain situations, get you out of a game if somebody's hurt. I'm not saying his whole career is done, but there is no way, to me, he is a starting inside middle linebacker in a 3-4. No way. The instincts just aren't there, and I don't see how you're ever going to coach instincts into that young man. So when you look at the positives and the negatives, that's kind of why it's hard for me to really get excited about this game. I think a lot of Cardinals fans are very excited when you see just kind of the beatdown that they put on the Bengals. The reason why I'm not all that excited is, what were the two most important things for me? Marco Wilson and Zaven Collins. And those were the two biggest letdowns for me. So I can't get all that jacked up. Now, one of the major things that I was worried about is the pass rush. And the pass rush looked great. So I feel good about that. I feel great about Andy Isabella, but does it matter? I feel great about Greg Dortch, but does it matter? I mean, maybe it does. If those two players do well at the beginning of the year, maybe you're able to make up for the loss of Christian Kirk. And I don't think Christian Kirk was great, but he was good. He was okay. But Christian Kirk and D-Hop not being a part of the team for six games, I think that those two, Dortch and Isabella, prove that maybe there's enough there that you can get by at the beginning of the season. There were some positives. But to me, there were four things that mattered in this game. Will Hernandez, pass rush, Zaven Collins, Marco Wilson. And in that sense, you only got 50%. But the two that failed were so far below average that it hardly makes up for the two that were positive. But make no mistake, Will Hernandez and the pass rush were two big question marks, and they both came out with shining colors. All right, coming up next, D-backs continually doing what they're supposed to do. Now, can they do it tonight? What's up next on Doug Franz Unplugged? I got a lot to talk about to you today about the Arizona Diamondbacks. Number one, I hope you know this about me, but in case you don't, you have my word. Me looking you in the eye and letting you know that even if we disagree on, let's say, like Mike Hazen, there are some of you that think the general manager of the Diamondbacks should be fired. And I don't. And I want to let you know that if that day ever comes, it doesn't matter what I think of him as a person. I will tell you, I think this man should be fired. That's my role on Doug Franz Unplugged, to use the baseball knowledge that I've acquired and to put whatever I know into the game, or whatever I know about the game, into my opinions. So I want you to know that before I tell you this, because I have to be able to separate the person from the job, you know, and if I'm ready to say, hey, it's time for him to go, I'm going to tell you that. But there's hardly anybody in this city I respect more, at least right now, than Mike Hazen. What I saw Saturday was so human, so raw, and so amazing. I went to Nicole Hazen's, what they called, celebration of life service, but me being Catholic, it was a funeral mass. And Nicole's brother spoke at the funeral mass and talked about his sister and his sister taking him to a Debbie Gibson concert. And near the end, Mike spoke. And he said he made a promise to his wife that he would tell her story and their story together to everybody. and Mike, you knew didn't want to. Mike Hazen is very strange this way. He does not like public speaking, and he's outstanding at it. And he spoke about his wife. There was about one 10-second pause in there. And other than that, it was just very fluid. I don't know why we do this. I do this, and I don't think any of us should, but I do. And that is, we compare strength to whether or not you break down and cry in that moment. I don't know why. I know I could not stand up there at Jennifer's funeral and give a speech without having massive breakdowns during the speech. While I would be talking, I would be thinking about how much I love her and miss her. And I would be overwhelmed with emotion in that moment. I could sit in the pew and not cry very much during the funeral. That wouldn't be that hard for me. But to actually be speaking, I can't talk without emotion. When I do public speaking, I can't be good at it unless I allow my emotions to come out. And then boom, I would just be a blubbering mess. Mike was unbelievable. The things he said about his wife were so pure. The things he said to his boys, as he told each, they have four boys, and he told each of his sons what part of their mother's personality is embedded in them. And it was just an incredible show of raw strength. I felt so blessed to be there to hear. And I don't know Nicole Hazen. I never met Nicole Hazen. But listening to Mike talk about her, I was so glad he did, because I was there to just kind of show my support to Mike Hazen, to show him I really respect how hard he's been working despite the last 2 years, knowing that his wife's going to die. And the fear he had to have this whole time of, is she taken care of? Are my boys taken care of? While trying to figure out, why am I not winning more baseball games? You know? But going to that funeral, it was awe-inspiring. And that's why I reiterate to you that I will say, I will treat him the exact same way as a general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks on my opinions of him as a general manager. But there will never be a day where my opinion of him as a person drops, even if I don't think he should stay on at the job. I wanted to be fair to you to let you know, there's hardly anybody in this city as a human being that I respect more than Mike Hazen after being at that funeral. It was amazing. There's a lot of, I got to tell you, this is truly Doug Franz Unplugged, because I don't know if any of you even care about this next opinion, but there are a lot of people that are higher ups within the Catholic Diocese of Phoenix that listen to Doug Franz Unplugged. A lot of priests that listen to Doug Franz Unplugged. And I got to tell you an opinion about Nicole Hazen's funeral that I think a lot of you might disagree with from the Catholic point of view. In the Catholic religion, we have a funeral mass, but it is a mass. And very, very rarely are there Catholic masses where a layperson, meaning a non-person devoted to the religious life, actually speaks at the mass. So there are a lot of parishes that believe that you should not have a eulogy because that's not part of mass. And I've never really had a huge opinion on that, left or right. It's like, you know what? I get it, because I'm sure that there's been some bad eulogies and you wish, hey, this is a mass. It's not what we do. And you stick to that. And other times, you know, you've been at masses where there's been a eulogy and you thought, well, that was pretty good. I want to firmly say to anyone involved in the Catholic Mass or in any parish who makes the decisions, if you are choosing to stick to the guns of a Catholic Mass and say, we don't have a layperson coming up to eulogize the dead because it's we're sticking to the mass, I think you're screwing it up. Remember, we are not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for us. And I look at this the exact same way. We were not made for mass. Mass is made for us. And I think Mike Hazen, by speaking, Nicole's brother, by speaking, bring people closer to understanding our joy in celebrating someone's life, which I actually think can help bring people to the religion and to the church. And when you say, no, we've got to stick to our traditions, why? You know, it's no different than the disciples not washing before a meal and Jesus defending them. Let's not stick to our traditions in certain areas where we're eliminating opportunities to let people show who they are. That was an amazing service. So all credit to the parish that I was at and that ceremony. Man, it was beautiful. I was glad I was there. Okay, let me move on from my religious aspects and talk specifically about the game. Diamondbacks had terrible flight problems getting into Colorado, took the beginning of Friday's game, but then couldn't hold on and lost. And I was really thrilled to see what they were able to do Saturday and Sunday. Zach Gallen, 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, back-to-back starts that he's done that, 3 of his last 5 that he's done that. Zach Gallen really getting a handle on things. And what was awesome about Saturday is you're now doing it at Coors Field. So you can't even pitch the same way that you pitch in at sea level. But I also thought he threw a little more curveballs than the average pitcher. And he threw them with conviction. Because your curveballs don't break with the same sharpness at elevation. Most pitchers have been told millions of times it's got to be fastball, changeup. And just by the fact of Zach Gallen telling the Rockies through his actions, listen, I don't care that I'm at altitude. You still can't hit my curveball. He threw it at least enough and threw it well enough that they were worried, okay, maybe he is going to throw me a curveball. I think hitters go up with this amazing sense of confidence that I know the elevation has eliminated this pitch from your repertoire. And to see a guy aggressively throw some of his breaking pitches forced the Rockies into a defensive situation of, you know what, I have no idea what he's going to throw. And even though he kept it, pretty heavy fastball changeup. He threw enough curveballs and threw them well that the Rockies were at least wondering, when are you going to throw the next one? He was tremendous. And then on Sunday, okay, we kind of held on as Henry started to fall apart in the 6th inning. But I like the fact that Torrey Lovello sent him back out there. A lot of people will say, hey, he's young. He pitched you 5 shutout innings. He's got the win at that moment as the pitcher of record. Let's get him out of there. Let's make him happy. Let's get him out of there and protect his psyche. And I don't agree with that at all, unless his psyche is damaged. If he's got a damaged psyche, yeah, then you probably take him out. But I think when you're pitching at elevation, you're trying to protect the bullpen before you go to San Francisco. Let's get as many innings out of him as we can. And if he does struggle, that kind of puts it on him to say, hey, you haven't arrived yet. You know, you got a long way to go. And that's exactly what happened. He pitched 5 1/3, got blown up pretty good in the 6th inning. But the Diamondbacks kept piling on runs behind Christian Walker's 4 for 5 on the day. And you might have heard me say this in the 4-minute offense. Josh Rojas almost batted 500 in this series. 6 of 13, 2 stolen bases, 5 RBIs, and just creates havoc. Now, he's got to get better defensively. Another error for Josh Rojas. He made one great play defensively at third. I think it was on Saturday's game. But another bad error defensively. And I know he's working on it. I know that. It's easy for me to sit here as a guy that could never play Major League Baseball and say, you've got to do better. But Josh, you've got to do better. Because I don't think you're a good enough hitter to be a designated hitter. You can certainly fill in from time to time. But this defensive issue has got to improve. And it's just plain and simple not good enough. But he's a heck of a ball player. Heck of a ball player. So I was jacked up at the game. Here's the cool stat. The Arizona Diamondbacks have won more games in 2022 than they did in 2021. And right now it's August 15th. Here's Christian Walker.
I think it's just a tribute to the group of guys and being able to, you know, flush things and move on. You know, it's hard to put your finger on one thing, and you don't want to compare yourself to last year. It's almost, you know, playing with handcuffs on a little bit. But in the same sense, I think it's good to look back and acknowledge, you know where we were and how far we've come. And, you know, if nothing else, just being able to trust our process through those results. You know, what we're doing is working. It's better. It's in the right direction, but there's always room to grow. So, you know, just building on yesterday, and, you know, obviously tomorrow is going to be building on today and just being 1% better every day.
Cool hearing him say that, and then it's even more amazing when you consider they still have Lawler at shortstop in the minors, Corbin Carroll in the outfield in the minors, and then, of course, even though he's injured after surgery, but eventually Drew Jones will be great. So they've still got three major pieces. Pavin Smith, if he ever figures it out, that's a decent piece. I've always liked the young man, Pavin Smith, but I've never been a huge, you know, total believer in Pavin Smith, but you've got that piece as well. Hopefully, I mean, there's a lot of good things, and they're really excited about their pitching coming up as well. I think the position players are ahead of their stud pitching, but man, starting to feel good about the future of the Arizona Diamondbacks. All right, coming up next, JJ Watt's a wimp. On Doug Franz Unplugged. Just a couple quick odds and ends before I get to versus Vegas today. I think you'll like this. I just totally ripped this off of JJ Watt's Instagram account. This is from I ripped it off of ESPN.com and they took it from JJ Watt. But this is pretty funny.
All right, here is an update on the snake situation. For those of you who don't know, woke up this morning, went to the bathroom, found a baby rattlesnake in the corner of the bathroom, curled up in the corner. I'm from Wisconsin. I don't have a lot of experience with snakes. A couple garden snakes here or there, a couple in Houston, but don't know a lot about snakes. Don't know how to handle snakes, not a big fan of snakes. When I got down here to Arizona, everybody said, you know, watch out for the scorpions and watch out for the rattlesnakes. You know, you live close to the mountains, there's gonna be snakes. Monsoon season brings out the snakes. Stay away from rattlesnakes. Babies are the most venomous rattlesnakes because they don't know how to handle their venom. They shoot it all in their first bite. So I got all this stuff in my head. So I call a guy. I mean, I don't know what to do. So I call this guy, and he comes out to the house. And he takes a look at it. And he just picks it up with his bare hands. And he goes, it's not a rattlesnake. It's a long-nosed snake. Completely harmless. And then he left. So if you ever want to feel like a wimp, that's the way to do it.
So notice he called himself a wimp before I did when I was giving you the tease, as we call it, the business, going into the commercial break of hearing about Burrito Express and hearing about Fushaw Media. That was pretty entertaining. Oh, by the way, speaking of Burrito Express, don't forget Saturday the 20th coming up this weekend of 10 to noon is when they will have their fun event with Daniel Ngata and other Sun Devils signing autographs 10 to noon, 10 in the morning until noon. And if you go to the Tempe location from 10 to noon and you say, I'm in the Unplugged Army, you will get an amazing burrito sale of only $5 for steak, one of their big breakfast jobs. I mean, I can't wait to try it for only $5. I'm pretty jacked up, and I'll see you there coming up Saturday. I don't know when I'll get there, but I'll be there for most of the time as well. So that's coming up Saturday the 20th. Don't forget that. The other thing, a couple other notes NFL-wise, Lamar Jackson, who's coming, he's probably not going to play, but he's coming Sunday here to State Farm Stadium when the Cardinals host the Ravens. He has let the Ravens know that he will not sign a new contract during the season. So he wants all negotiations to be wrapped up by week one or end by week one, and then they'll restart at the end of the season. That is, however, an arbitrary deadline. He can decide to break that deadline whenever he wants. I don't know if the Ravens will totally honor it, and there are no rules in the CBA about negotiations needing to end. The only thing that matters is July 15th of 23. Yes, of 2023. That's when any negotiations on a long-term contract would have to end. And that's only if they franchised him and given him the franchise tag back in March. So you franchise somebody in March, and then you still have mid-July to work out a long-term deal. But if he doesn't sign anything between or before week one, he is now saying he won't talk again until they're out of the playoffs or the regular season ends, whichever comes first. And then they would have until mid-March at the beginning of the new league year to find out whether or not they're going to franchise him or not. So that's a little bit on him. And then lastly, kind of the big story in the NFL, if it grabs you, if you consider this meaningful, at least it's a step in the right direction. Deshaun Watson, still not suspended as of yet, but he issued an apology during a television interview.
Look, I want to say that I'm truly sorry to all the women that I've impacted in this situation. My decisions that I made in my life that put me in this position, I would definitely like to have back, but I want to continue to move forward and grow and learn and show that, you know, I am a true person of character, and I want to keep pushing forward.
I don't really know how to take that, because on the one hand, any lawyer in the world would have told him, don't apologize before these cases were heard. All of them. Because then the question becomes, well, what are you apologizing for? It's almost an admittance of guilt, which you especially don't want as you go into a civil trial. So I understand why it's taken this long. And you can't help but wonder, though, do you really mean it? I mean, are you just saying it now because that's what the judge said? Because You could say, well, why didn't you apologize behind closed doors when you were in there with the judge? Well, again, you're admitting that you did it. And now that he doesn't have anything to lose, now he's sorry. Did he really grow and learn? Or is he just saying this to start to sway public opinion? And he's still the same dude. I'm not qualified to answer that question. What do I think? I think he's just sucking up. But I don't have any background to know that. I just think what he did was just so gross and heinous that it's hard for me to then in turn think, oh, now you've learned your lesson, that's not appropriate. I used to love Deshaun Watson, used to love him. And this last one, this is kind of spliced up by ESPN. So I got this off of ESPN.com, but here's the story. First voice you're going to hear is John Calipari, head coach of UK basketball. And he's a little bitter because Kentucky has spent a ton of money on a new football facility and a new football building. And the basketball building is still a little bit behind, you know, where you would think Kentucky basketball would be. But the football team's been exploding lately. The last, like, 3 years in a row, I think they've been around 9 wins, 10 wins. They've been doing really well. And I think I hear total jealousy from John Calipari. Like, hey, fine, I hope they do well, but let's not forget, basketball is much more important. Let's stay here, and let's let other people be good at football. We can't be messing around with this. That's really what it sounds like. And then the next voice you're going to hear is Mark Stoops, who's clearly fired up at John Calipari. This is kind of athletic department on athletic department crime. It's kind of gold.
This is a basketball school. It's always been there. Alabama is a football school. So is Georgia. I mean, they are.
Right.
This is a bad. Don't dis our football team. I hope they win games in 10 games and go to bowls. At the end of the day, that makes my job easier, and it makes the job of all of us easier. But this is a basketball school.
I don't care what anybody says about their program. That's not my business. That's not my lane. But when you start talking about my program and others that we compete against, I mean, me, I don't do that. I stay in my lane. And, you know, so that's in defense of my players, the defense of the work that we've done. And believe me, we want to continue to push. But don't demean or distract from the hard work and the dedication and the commitment that people have done to get to this point. And listen, we all know this program wasn't born on third base. You know, so some may, but I could promise you this football team didn't wake up on third base. I did a lot of work. We did a lot of work. The commitment from the Joe Crafts and the so many different people, and Mitch and Dr. Barnhart, you know, or Dr. Capiluto, so many people have done so much that you have to have a respect and appreciation for. We all want more.
I think John Calipari is a great interview. I've had him on the old show maybe 3-4 times. Love talking basketball with him. Love his opinions. But I'm not a fan of the man. I mean, I've always felt like he's kind of a snake. And boy, did he back himself into a corner here. And Stoops got him. Stoops got him good on that one. It's time for
Versus
Bayard. It's been a long time since there's been dancing. Not good. Not terrible, but not good. 3-3 over the weekend. Dropping the record to 438 and 372. So I remember my original goal was to try to get 60 games above 500, and I'm still over that, but just not dominating the way I was, and I want to dominate. I took Tampa Bay on the money line against Baltimore. It wasn't very close. Baltimore won 10-3, got smoked. I thought the Bengals were going to care a little bit more about the game than the Cardinals, so I took the Bengals to cover 2.5. They got smoked. And I took the Lions with the half-point hook to beat Atlanta. Atlanta won 27-23, so it had to be a one-point game. Well, it had to be less than that, didn't it? I didn't get anything on that one. But I nailed the Browns one, but I didn't even get it right for that reason. I thought Deshaun Watson would play a lot, do well, and that's why Jacksonville would lose. Deshaun Watson only went 1 of 5 for the Browns and was out of the game. But the Browns won 24-13, so I lucked into that one. I crushed the Dodgers-Royals pick Friday night. Dodgers had to cover 2.5 on the run line. They did, 1-8-3. And I had Minnesota on the run line, covering the run line by 1.5 over the Angels, and the Twins won 4-0, so I got that right. So those are my three wins. I only found three games today that I like. Baltimore flew up to Toronto last night. I like Toronto on the money line. I like the pitching matchup for the Blue Jays. I got Philadelphia on the money line against the Reds. I probably could get away with a run line there, but I don't trust the Phillies, so I like the money line there. And I really like Minnesota over the Royals on the run line, -1.5. But both teams were traveling and they flew into Minnesota yesterday, so there's no travel benefit there. So really three games. I got Toronto and Philly as favorites, but not covering the run line. I got them on the money line. And I got the Twins covering the run line, 1.5 at home against the Royals. Tell me what you think. Hey, don't forget, tomorrow is Town Hall Tuesday. So I really would like your emails. I'd really like all of your phones, your voicemail, not your voicemails. I don't know. I don't have a voicemail set up. But your videos, if you can tweet out videos or on Instagram, send them to me. And I can use that to kind of go over some things and answer any of your questions, football, baseball, questions about life, you know, Dear Doug, like Dear Abby or something. I'll do whatever you need. Love to hear from you. Thanks for making Doug Franz Unplugged part of your day. Thanks to Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. Thanks to everybody at Ideal Home Loans, 602-899-7000. Thanks to Bell's Nashville Kitchen and Rosati's on Ray and McQueen. And don't forget, even though I already mentioned it, head out to the Tempe location, the Burrito Express, Saturday morning from 10 to noon for an autograph signing if you're a hardcore ASU fan, or if you just want to eat great food inexpensively, then that's another reason. I'll see you tomorrow.